Why didn't I sense your cold? I asked.
I was repressing my frost, Brother Thistle said.
I turned to Arcus.
Were you deliberately making your cold stronger so I could sense it?
He shrugged.
A little.
Well, don't. Move somewhere else and I'll see if I can sense you. And you, Brother Thistle, perhaps you can do the same. I'd like to see if I can sense you, too.
He shook his head, pushing up with his walking stick and stretching.
I must take my old bones inside for midday prayers. Arcus, will you continue the lesson? Mr. Trailer, I expect all your attention when we train. Every morning, here, after prayers. Show me dedication and I will show you things you never dreamed you could do.
And you'll tell me what you're training me for, I added. He nodded, then walked toward the abbey. I hopped up and shook the cobwebs from my limbs, stretching tense muscles and wincing at the pins and needles in my feet.
What do you think you're doing? Asked Arcus.
Who says we have to sit here on the freezing ground? He nodded.
You stand and I'll move.
It'll ruin it if I can hear you clumping around in those boots. His jaw tightened.
I know how to move quietly.
I closed my eyes and returned to the word. Thoughts came thick and fast. I took a deep breath and let them flow over me. As before, it took a few minutes until my mind began to quiet. This time, though, I stayed half in, half out of the still place. A part of me was searching. Searching for cold. Nothing. No. Wait. There, on the edge. Right there. Slowly, poised in the middle of the endless universe, I raised my arm and pointed.
I heard a harumph. Very good, Arcus said, his voice closer than I'd expected. But let's see how you do when I move farther away.
I nodded and breathed deep, centering myself. Floating awareness. Searching. Nothing, nothing, nothing. A pulse of cold to my left. I raised my arm and pointed.
Good. Let's try farther still.
I breathed. The thoughts fewer now. The world was empty. In that state, I was alone, but not lonely. For a moment, I was whole. But a part of me searched for something outside myself. My heat longed for cold. Where was it? Where? I raised my arms, palms out, searching. On the tip of one finger, then on my palm, a cool whisper. I moved my palm to the right, then left, then right until I sensed where it was strongest. Straight in front of me.
I pointed and earned a graveled laugh. You're not half bad at this, Lady Firebrand. I was never very good at this game. Brother Thistle is teaching you well.
My eyes opened, but I couldn't reconcile the vision of my surroundings with the endless space inside my mind. The earth leaned to the right and I stumbled. I was caught by firm hands.
Steady, Arcus said, setting me back on my feet. You shouldn't come out of that state so quickly. Sit for a moment, go back into that place, and take your time floating up again. You could do yourself harm if you tried to snap into awareness too fast.
I did as he said, letting my mind adjust slowly to the outside world. In a few minutes, I took one last deep breath and opened my eyes. Arcus sat facing me, an arm's length away.
He said in a thoughtful tone. It's remarkable that you can do that with so little training.
My chest glowed a little. Maybe there was hope for me yet. As we walked toward the abbey, Arcus put his hand under my elbow to steady me. I stiffened, but didn't shrug it away.
Your mind is progressing well, he said, but it's your body that concerns me. You're still weak.
He stopped and pushed my sleeve up to my elbow. As our skin touched, we both sucked in a breath at the discomfort of it.
You'll never hold a sword with those arms. Where are your muscles?
Yes, prison was full of opportunities to build my strength. I jerked my arm away and shoved the sleeve back down.
Well, you have them now. Starting tomorrow, I want you working yourself as hard as you can. The tower steps are steep, up and down twice a day. Brother Peel in the kitchen has heavy pots to wash and bags of flour to move. Help him. Sister Clove in the stables can give you plenty of work, too.
It was all so sensible I had no cause to argue. But still, it annoyed me to be ordered around. And what will you do while I work myself ragged?
I'll be training, as I do every day.
And what are you training for, exactly? He hesitated, then let out a breath.
To help you. It's my job to lead you through an entrance into the castle, and, if we're both very lucky, to get you out safely again.
I realized my mouth had fallen open as he chuckled.
What did you think? We would send you in by yourself through the front door. You wouldn't make it to the foot of the mountain without my help.
What's the plan? Tell me everything.
So impatient to ride your death, Fireblood. You'd make a good soldier.
He quickly changed tack.
You favour your left shoulder. I had thought to teach you sword play today, but I notice you keep your left arm to your side and wince whenever you raise it.
I grimaced. Those cold blue eyes took in much more than I had expected. An old injury, I said, gently rotating my shoulder.
From prison?
He asked softly. I shook my head. From when I was 7 and fell out of a tree. I was trying to catch a squirrel. I wanted a pet. He made a noise that sounded suspiciously like laughter.
And it still bothers you?
Only when I'm forced to spend hours with my backside planted on the freezing ground. He smiled, drawing my eye. My heart fluttered at the way his eyes crinkled, the flash of his bright teeth. The scar that cleft his lip seemed to add to the attraction of that smile. Unsettled, I forced my eyes away and focused on the drab stones of the abbey. "Why do you hide your face?" I asked. A dark suspicion had crept into my mind. Arcus wore a hood, and he was clearly scarred. He and Brother Thistle had said they were drawn to me because of what happened in my village. What if Arcus was one of the soldiers I had burned? As soon as I asked the question, the temperature dropped. Frost spread underfoot, making dead leaves crackle.
"I don't recall giving you permission to ask me questions," he replied.
"I don't recall needing permission. What are you hiding?"
"I'm hiding nothing. I only cover what people don't wish to see."
I crossed my arms. He regarded me with a steady, unwavering stare. Perhaps I was wrong, and he had simply lumped me in with all the small-minded fools who would ridicule someone for their appearance. I would never judge someone for their scars. "At least I got to see your eyes today," I said.
"And why should you wish to see my eyes?"
"I don't know. Perhaps because I know so little about you, and you know so much about me. Or, perhaps, to make sure you are a person and not a block of ice." His expression turned guarded. I knew I was staring, but the blue of his irises were a mosaic of tones. Not just one single colour. I found myself straining forward in some unconscious, infinitesimal way, as if all those enchanting blues were calling to my blood, cooling it and heating it at the same time, leaving me in a state of restless confusion. Something flickered in his eyes, which turned into a snowy sky, suddenly blank and cold.
"I am a block of ice."
The words met my skin like a bucket of water drawn from a mountain stream. Dead leaves crunched under his boots as he turned and strode off, taking all the blues with him.
Chapter 10. The mid-afternoon sun danced through the remaining library window, laying rectangles of blushing gold on the stone walls. "Sister Pastel? May I come in?" I asked from the doorway. In the week since returning from my aborted escape, I'd seen Sister Pastel, reportedly the finest illuminator in the abbey, hunched over her work for hours at a time. I was fascinated by her work, the precise, flowing letters and vibrant pictures. She put her brush back into the cup and turned to me.
"You may enter, Miss Atrera."
I stepped forward, careful to keep my sleeves from catching any of the delicate rolls of parchment lying on the tables. I had wondered... My voice trailed off as my eyes caught on a blackened table leg, reminding me of my show of temper during my previous visit. Surely the calm and careful illuminator wouldn't trust a fireblood near all her precious books.
"I'm glad you came," she said, surprising me.
Her mouth curved into something I took to be a smile on a face unused to the expression.
"I've not thanked you for saving my life."
"No need," I said quickly. "Fire doesn't hurt me, at least not easily. I'm sure Arcus would have found a way if I hadn't."
"It was still a risk and shows character that you bothered. We weren't friends."
"We weren't enemies. At least, not as far as I was concerned." Her eyes fell to her hands, folded neatly in her lap.
"I confess I saw you as one. The first day, when Brother Lack and I brought in your bath, I suspected you were a fireblood. I was furious that Brother Thistle had allowed you to come here. I felt he was endangering us with your presence."
She paused, and I waited before prompting. "And now?"
"I see that you're trying to learn to master your gift with Brother Thistle's help. I ask your forgiveness for judging you wrongly."
I shifted uncomfortably. "There's nothing to forgive. I've been treated well here." Her mouth curved again, and this time it was clearly a small smile. "Now, what brings you to my domain of smelly pigments and cramped fingers?"
"I was hoping you might show me your techniques. I don't want to interrupt your work, of course, but I would dearly love to learn how to do what you do, or at least whatever poor excuse I'm able to achieve. Your work's beautiful."
"Thank you. Sit at this table next to me and I'll happily show you." My cheeks heated with a joyful flush.
But, she added slowly, "perhaps take care not to let any frustration turn to heat. We wouldn't wish another fire to start, especially not here."
My joy faded.
"I didn't start that fire, Sister Pastel."
She paused, studying me closely.
"I'm glad to hear that, though it disturbs me to think one of my own order did, and that they didn't come forward to confess when you were accused."
I shook my head. "It could have been a fire improperly extinguished. We may never know what happened.
But let me assure you, you can trust me.
If I get frustrated, I'll find Arcus and ask for some extra training. He's always a good outlet for my wrath." Sister Pastel chuckled and handed me a brush. Over the next week, life at the Abbey became a blur of routine. Even though I'd recovered, I continued to sleep in the infirmary. I was comfortable there, and Brother Gamut had confessed that not many rooms in the Abbey were fit for occupation. In the mornings, I woke at the matins bell and dressed in my tunic and leggings. Then it was up and down the tower stairs twice before meeting Brother Thistle on the training ground. I improved in uneven spurts, finally learning to burn the detested shrub I had missed during my first lesson, and then any target that Brother Thistle pointed out, though my aim was, in his words, "rather unpredictable at times." He had me exert finer levels of control by starting the fire in the warming room every evening, drying wet robes hung out on wash day, even lighting a candle from a distance, which took hours and hours of practice. I was able to complete my tasks with increasing reliability. Still, the larger uses of flame often eluded me, much to my frustration. After my lessons, I usually headed for the stables to help Sister Clove, who was in charge of the livestock. She had roughly hewn features and large hands that were gentle with the animals. I helped her muck the stalls, groom horses, and carry heavy sacks of seed or grain for the chickens and pigs and goats. When I finished in the stables, I would head for the kitchen, housed in a separate building because of the risk of fire, and offer to help the cook, Brother Peel. He usually had me wash pots and carry buckets of water from the well. Occasionally, he asked me to gather herbs to season his pottage, which I had just done. Strolling through the cloister on my way to the kitchen, I breathed the scents of crushed weeds and kitchen smoke. I gave the icy statue of Fors a saucy wink and clutched my robe tighter. After a few days of mild weather, a north wind had whipped up with a vengeance, forcing its way through my clothes and pulling at my joints. As I passed through the reverent hush of the church, I noticed that some of the pews had been removed, no doubt burned in the fire, and the scent of ashes still hung in the air. My steps grew light. The soaring arch ceiling and large stained-glass rendering of Tempus filling me with awe. On impulse, I walked down the central aisle and settled on one of the kneelers under the window. I gazed up at Tempus, and he stared back, neither of us sure of the other. Maybe it would have been easier if it was Sood or Cirrus, but Tempus was almost as forbidding as Fors and more powerful, being the father of the four winds. I pressed my hands together and prayed to Cirrus, watcher of the dead, to keep my mother safe in the afterworld in the sky. When I thought of my mother, my chest grew painfully tight. With chapped knuckles, I tried to rub away the pain at the back of my eyes before continuing to the kitchen. "Sorry I'm late," I said to Brother Peel as I hung my cloak on a peg in the kitchen wall. "I was..." It seemed silly to tell him I'd been praying. He prayed 5 times a day at set times, along with all the other monks. Fortunately, Brother Peel was too busy chopping potatoes to notice my half-finished sentence. The first time I'd come to the kitchen to offer help, he'd barely spoken, watching me as if I were a fox angling to steal his chickens. But he gradually became accustomed to me, and I'd found him to be quite loquacious. "Rabbit's in the pot already," he said, motioning with his knife. He had an accent, having come from the northern hill tribes, and I liked the way he rolled his R's. "I'll take care of the turnips," I said, pulling out a small cloth bag and placing it on a table. "I brought you some wild parsley I found by the stream yesterday."
"Excellent. We'll put it to good use. But take care you don't use too much salt this time. It's mined in Safra and nearly impossible to get these days with trade closed off. You can't just go throwing handfuls into every stew. And keep your sticky fingers out of my bread. You're worse than a badger in a root cellar."
We were still peeling, chopping and trading quips when the door burst open.
"Where the blazes have you been?" demanded Arcus.
"I was pestering Brother Peel for another biscuit," I said. Unfortunately, I found him to be rather stingy. I received a playful whack from a grinning Brother Peel and a glare from Arcus.
"You were supposed to meet me for sword training an hour ago."
I gaped. "That's tomorrow."
"Today."
"But..." I cast an apologetic look at Brother Peel. Arcus was completely unmoved.
"You have 10 minutes. Don't make me wait."
My hands shook as I drew my red tunic over my head and slid on my boots, my stomach twisting with nerves. I'd never held a sword, not even one of the wooden practice swords used by the boys in my village. Mother had said that weapons and hot tempers make a dangerous pair. My fire was a weapon, but part of me. It could hurt, but it could also cook food, create life-giving heat, and boil water. The purpose of a sword was to maim or kill. Considering my plan was to kill the king, it was strange how the thought weighed on me. Thick grey clouds seemed to hover over the spot Arcus had designated for our lesson. Instead of the usual training ground, he had chosen an area between the budding fruit trees and the river,
where a fish pond sat dull and still under a patchwork of lily pads. He wore his training gear, the blue tunic and black mask that covered his cheeks and nose but not his eyes, the colour of frozen pools reflecting the sky. He held out a sword. My hands chilled as they wrapped around the cold steel hilt. It was surprisingly heavy. Even after 2 weeks of training my strength, the weapon dangled from my arm like a broken branch. "Why do I have a real sword and you don't?" I nodded to the wooden practice sword gripped in his hand. "Aren't you afraid I'll hurt you?"
"Your sword is blunted, and I wanted you to feel the weight of the real thing. Now, raise it like this."
I bunched my muscles and lifted the weapon.
"Higher,"
he ordered. My arm trembled, but I raised it so the tip was level with my nose.
"Now, stand like this."
I mimicked his stance, feet apart, knees bent.
"You're off balance," he accused. "I could take you down with one kick."
He came over to me, snapping out instructions as he put a hand to my back, my shoulder, the back of my knee, until he was satisfied. Although his hands were cold, they weren't bitingly so. It seemed the longer I stayed in the abbey, the more I grew used to the proximity of Frostbloods.
"Now, come at me."
I moved toward him, my sword held out. With one swipe, he dashed the weapon from my hand. It met the grass with a thud, sending up a spray of morning dew. Arcus still held his sword in the ready position. "Is this the part where I beg for mercy?" I asked. I was using light words to hide the fact that I was out of my element. Arcus seemed to think I wasn't serious about the lesson. His face darkened.
"You think the king's soldiers will care if you beg?"
Heat flared up my neck and into my cheeks. I picked up the sword, gripped the hilt, and went at him in earnest. He parried my stroke and disarmed me. I tried again, and my sword went flying. After a third time, I picked up the sword and threw it as far as I could. It landed with a splash in the fish pond.
"You retrieve your weapon right now."
The words were delivered from between clenched teeth, as if he would rather have tossed me into the pond after it, or perhaps just my severed head.
"You're supposed to be teaching me," I shouted. "I already know that I'm useless with a sword. What are you trying to prove?"
Arcus looked away.
"Brother Thistle is too easy on you. He wants to go slowly. He doesn't want to push. Meanwhile, war still rages in the Arras Plains. The land withers. Families starve. If this goes on, there will be no kingdom to save."
"And that's my fault," I demanded, "for not being ready." He hesitated.
"No, it's mine, for not teaching you fast enough."
"You think I'll learn faster when I'm out of my head with fury?"
"I'm trying to show you that losing focus in battle could mean losing your life. And you lose focus all too easily, Fireblood."
His words sank in slowly, like drops of rain. This lesson was a test of my temper. I had to show him I could keep it. I slogged to the pond and searched until I saw metal shining under the surface of the shallow edge. As I touched the hilt, something brushed my hand. I jumped back, and the sword slipped from my fingers.
"What now?" Arcus said tightly.
I shuddered. Something cold and slimy.
"You're afraid of fish?"
he asked in disbelief. "I'm not afraid. I just hate them. So cold." I looked at him meaningfully. "It's like touching a Frostblood."
"Indeed," he murmured. "Now stop being ridiculous and get your sword."
I reached in again and grasped the hilt, gritting my teeth in case I felt another slimy caress. Knees wet, I returned to our training area. He demonstrated the various attacks and how to block them. He showed me how to protect my stomach, my flank, my thigh, my shoulder, my head. Some positions twisted my wrist at an awkward angle. My head spun trying to remember it all. If I parried too high or too low, he corrected me, making me repeat the moves until my arm ached. As I was unlikely to overcome an enemy with power and size, he focused on teaching me to be light on my feet, using quick, evasive moves to get out of the way and how to block when I couldn't. For a while, we went through the motions slowly. Then the blows came faster. I panted as I tried to match his pace.
"Keep your sword up," he said.
"I'm trying, but we've been at this for hours. I'm tired."
"Watch your surroundings," he warned.
"Then slow down. This is slow." I leaped backward, looking for a break from his constant advance. The earth was sponging under my feet. I stumbled.
"You're giving up solid ground," he shouted. "Watch your..."
My foot hit mud. Arcus threw down his practice sword and reached toward me, but my own sword slashed the air in front of me as I flailed. I fell backward into the pond. The water wasn't deep, but it was shockingly cold. Arcus stood at the edge, shaking his head. "You meant to do that," I gasped, breathless with cold.
"I didn't, but it's a good lesson."
A smile tugged at his lips.
"You look like a cat in a rain barrel."
I scrambled toward the bank, grabbing pond plants and water lilies to pull myself forward. My foot slipped and I dipped under and bobbed back up. When I could see again, Arcus was shaking. It took a second to realize he was gripped by a fit of laughter. "Shut up or I'll..." I slipped again, and my mouth was filled with water.
"You're what?" Arcus gasped. "Attack me with a fish?"
Recovering himself, but still smiling, he offered his hand. I grabbed it and yanked him toward the pond. He shot out his free hand and froze a section of the water around me, just in time to slide nimbly across its surface. He used my arm as a pivot point and swung back to the grassy bank. It was a controlled move, and he'd been careful not to hurt my arm. A part of me admired the way he used his gift to alter his environment. The rest of me just seethed. He offered his hand again, but I slapped it away.
"Always remain aware of your surroundings," he said,
his voice low and serious, his grin fading.
"Especially in battle. If you're quick-witted, you can use them to your own advantage. It may save your life."
"Let's see how quick-witted you are," I muttered. I grabbed a handful of pond plants and mud and hurled it at him. It caught him square in the chest, a long, slimy root wrapping itself around his neck. "Maybe you should take your own advice," I countered. "That could have been my sword." He brushed off the slimy green tendrils, the grin returning. If I hadn't been so angry, I might have enjoyed the way his eyes sparkled at me.
"Point taken, Lady Firebrand. Now, as you don't want my help, I'll let you get yourself out. We'll have our next lesson soon. Don't forget your sword."
Chapter 11. As Sister Clove's trust in me grew, she sometimes let me ride Butter all over the Abbey grounds. Together, the mare and I explored the gardens, orchards, fields, paddocks, and the fragrant copses of trees used for firewood. On the northern edge of the land near the river, I found myself singing a song my mother had taught me, about enjoying the summer while it lasted, because winter would surely come and cover the world with snow again. Heading east, we rounded a cluster of apple trees and would have passed the orchard when I noticed a solitary figure leaning against a trunk. Although he was dressed in monk's robes, I knew from his broad shoulders and height that it was Arcus. I stopped singing and turned Butter away. I still hadn't forgiven him for my fall in the pond, and had found excuses not to repeat our lesson, which was made easier by the fact that Arcus had left for a couple of days and only just returned. Apparently, he often left the abbey for a day or two at a time, though no one seemed to know where he went. If they did, they certainly weren't telling me.
"Ruby," he called, "wait a moment."
I pulled to an abrupt halt. He had never used my name before. I waited as he came close, his hand lifting to pat Butter. He smiled at her soft knicker.
"That was a pretty song you were singing," he said. "Where did you learn it?"
I paused. "My mother taught it to me." He nodded.
"I liked hearing it today. It was rather melancholy."
I felt my brows rise and struggled to smooth my expression. Brother Gamut had asserted that Frostbloods are fully capable of feeling deeply. But I wasn't used to thinking of Arcus as having feelings at all. Still, his confession of feeling melancholy was strangely disarming.
"Want to talk about it?"
I asked, surprising myself. My mother always said that sharing a problem halves the burden. Not that it ever took much prodding for me to share what I felt. His mouth pulled up on one side.
"That doesn't surprise me. No one is left in any doubt about how you feel."
I waited for him to continue. When he said nothing more, I shrugged and lifted the reins to ride away.
"Brother Thistle tells me you're making progress in your lessons," Arcus said quickly,
almost as if he didn't want me to leave. I made a dismissive sound. "Brother Thistle is very kind and patient." Once the words were out, I regretted them. I shouldn't admit that my progress was slow. I wasn't sure what Arcus would do if he decided I wasn't worth his time. I've mastered the smaller flames, though. I can pass fire from one hand to another without losing control of it. And my aim is improving. He nodded, stroking his hand over Butter's neck. His hand was large and well-shaped, with a sprinkling of dark hair and long, blunt-edged fingers. My attention was arrested to see how gentle he was with the animal. He looked up at me.
"You haven't had your second lesson in swordplay."
"One was enough, thank you." His chin came up, and I felt, rather than saw, the look he levelled at me from the shadows of his hood.
"You don't get to decide that."
"So much for the freedom you promised."
"That's if you complete your task."
"If I survive it, you mean, and if I don't drown in a fish pond first." He took a breath, his nostrils flaring slightly, and exhaled. I derived a twisted satisfaction from testing his temper. It was good to know he had one. It meant he felt something, at least some of the time.
"As for that," he said, clearing his throat, "I wasn't the best teacher."
I opened my mouth, then closed it, some of my resentment fading. "No, you weren't." I let that hang in the air. "But perhaps I wasn't the most willing of pupils either."
"I shouldn't have laughed at you," he said.
I remember the way I kept slipping and bobbing back up. I supposed I must have looked a sight. I stared at him, wishing I could see more of his expression. I thought the corner of his mouth twitched up a little, but he managed to control it.
"I know you're not keen to try again," he said seriously, "but it's important to know the basic manoeuvres with the weapon. I ask that you trust me. This time I promise I won't laugh if you make a mistake."
"I ask. I promise." Such phrases as I never expected to hear from the self-proclaimed block of ice. I tilted my head. "Did Brother Thistle train you in the most effective methods of communicating with me?" His head lifted up and his lips curved.
"He may have given me some advice."
"And you took it?" My brows rose.
"I'm experimenting with it. If it doesn't work, I'll go back to my tried-and-true method."
"By which you mean threats and orders?" His smile widened. I pretended to look thoughtful. "Then, by all means, I must make sure you find this new method rewarding. When do we resume lessons?"
"Tomorrow morning, after you're finished with Brother Thistle," Same place as before, if it pleases you.
I'll wear ribbons in my hair if it'll keep your tongue so civil. He grinned up at me for a moment before turning away. As he strode off, he hummed the song I'd been singing. I blinked after him, feeling a strange fluttering in my stomach. Butter and I shook ourselves and continued our ride. A sort of truce formed between Arcus and me. Every day or two, he would give me another lesson in swordplay. I would do my best not to back into a bog or puddle, while he did his best not to yell at me or laugh when I tripped or lost my sword. I had little affinity for the lessons, though. The cold steel just felt so unnatural in my hand. I said as much while Arcus and I walked back toward the Appy after a lesson. "Don't think of it as a cold piece of steel," he said, touching my elbow and turning to face me. "Remember, it started out as liquid fire." "Liquid fire?" I asked, meeting his eyes.
"Have you ever been to a forge?"
I nodded. I visited the blacksmith's shop in my village sometimes to watch him make horseshoes or nails.
"I've been working on a new sword. Come by the smithy tomorrow morning after you finish with Brother Thistle and you can see what I mean. Perhaps if you can envision the steel in its nascent state, it won't feel so repugnant."
"Does that apply to Frostbloods?" I asked with feigned innocence. "If I'd seen you in your nascent state, would you be less repugnant to me?" A wicked gleam lit his eyes.
"What nascent state do you mean, exactly?"
Realizing the other possible meaning of my words, I spun away. "Not that, you conceited icicle. I meant, if I'd known you as a child, which, though impossible, is more likely than the scenario you're suggesting."
"Thank fors. I'd hate to bear my soul to you and be judged harshly."
Unwilling to let him get the better of me, I turned on my heel to face him and stepped in his path. He put his hands out reflexively, catching my upper arms. I let my eyes flick over him. It might be worth the experience if I could take a chip or two out of that towering pride. I smiled the way I'd seen shopkeepers' daughters do with village boys. He was silent, an unusual state for him. It was exhilarating, putting him off balance, to the point where I felt a pang of danger. This was a game to which I could become quite addicted if I wasn't careful. I turned away before I could see the flush that crept up my neck. "See you tomorrow, then."
"Just don't wear your cloak in the forge," he called after me. "With all the stray sparks, you're liable to catch fire."
But it wasn't the forge's effect on me that was worrisome. The smithy, a long building to the southwest of the abbey, was dominated by a stone hearth filled with glowing coals and a large bellows in front. A variety of metal instruments hung from hooks on the walls. To the left of the hearth, a broad male back, uncovered but for a sheen of sweat, was bent slightly. He lowered a hammer with ringing force onto a piece of heated metal held with tongs on an anvil. Luckily, the flush that swept over my skin was easily dismissed as a result of the heat in the room. "I didn't think you were serious yesterday," I said between hammer blows, "about bearing yourself to me." Arcus stopped and turned, and I saw that a leather apron covered his chest.
"It has nothing to do with you. It's hotter than the inside of Sud's volcanoes in here."
It was clear from his tone that his mood was a lot less playful than the day before, possibly because he was in a room that must feel excessively hot to him. I moved closer, touching implements on a work table along the way. "I thought you hated heat and flame."
"Necessary evils. I don't spend more time here than I must. Put on those gloves."
He nodded to leather gloves that sat on a table along the wall. I noticed he also wore a pair.
"I don't need them. Put them on."
I did, and joined him in front of the anvil.
"Take the tongs and put the blade in the fire," he instructed.
I took the tongs and held the long, crudely sword-shaped bit of metal above the coals. He put down the hammer and worked the bellows, making the flames leap higher.
"Ironwork is a dance of air and flame," he said. "To get the right level of heat, you need the right balance. Too little and you can't work the metal. Too much and you melt it. There, see that? That's the colour we need. Put it on the anvil, carefully."
I rolled my eyes at his imperious tone and did as he said. "I thought you wanted to show me liquid steel."
"You'll have to imagine that part. A few days ago, Sister Clove helped me heat the metal until it was pure liquid, then poured the liquid into a form and cooled it before starting to shape it. I've already refined the tip, but I need to add the bevel. Hold it steady."
He hammered the glowing orange metal, starting at the tip and working along the edge.
"See how it glows? Think of it this way. Fire is at its heart, even when it's cooled and hardened. Without heat, there would be no transformation, just an unformed piece of metal."
I shifted position to give my arm relief. "So, you admit fire is necessary?" "Hammer, hammer, hammer."
"I've already said as much."
"A necessary evil, I believe you called me. Hardly flattering." He glanced up.
"Do you need flattery?"
"I'd like you to admit the value of heat, and of fire bloods." The hammer stilled. He met my eyes.
"I do. Some of the best weapons are forged in the Fire Islands. There's nothing here that compares to the beauty of a fireblood sword."
My stomach made a peculiar dip. I couldn't find any words, so I nodded.
"It's cooled too much. Back into the coals," he said.
And we repeated the process of fire, bellows, waiting for the right colour, and back onto the anvil so we could work the metal. "I should practice heating the metal myself," I said, speculatively.
"No,"
Arcus replied, glaring.
"Not until you have much more control. I'd hate to think what you could do in a room with this much fuel."
"Your confidence in me is inspiring," I said, rolling my eyes.
"Speaking of your unshakable confidence," he said, eyes narrowed as he inspected the sword's bevel, "had you any idea what your powers could do before Brother Thistle began teaching you? As you didn't grow up with other firebloods, it's curious to me how much you actually know about your fire and your people."
"Most of what I know is from my grandmother. She was well-travelled, knew history, and brought me books, some of them written by fireblood scholars. You won't find those in Frostblood libraries."
"On the contrary, there are some here in the Abbey. But by and large you're right. And I suppose you've answered my next question. How you learned to read?"
"Yes, my mother and grandmother. But grandmother was the one who really challenged me to learn new words, memorize famous passages of prose and verse, expand my thinking." He lowered the hammer and gazed at me long enough that I shifted uncomfortably. "Stop staring at me like that," I complained.
"Like what?"
he asked, nodding to the hearth.
"More heat."
I held the blade above the coals again. A stray spark landed on his arm. It hissed into oblivion instantly, but Arcus jumped back a foot.
He sucked in a shaky breath and took the tongs from me, returning the sword to the anvil as if nothing had happened.
"You can go now," he said, coolly.
"Oh, can I? Why, thank you, my lord," I said sarcastically. "And for the record, I already know how you feel about fire, so you don't have to be mad that I've witnessed one of your weaknesses. We all have them, you know." He turned to look at me, his face completely expressionless. I tensed, waiting for a scathing response, but he mumbled something and looked away. I left the smithy and headed toward the kitchen to help Brother Peel with dinner preparations, still puzzling over his parting remark. I must have misheard him. It almost sounded like he'd said... I fear you are becoming one of mine. As Brother Thistle trained my mind, I became better at sensing the location of my frostblood opponents. Arcus sometimes tested that ability by making me wear a blindfold. He was whisper quiet as he advanced and moved around me, but I always knew where he was, my sword coming up to touch his. The problem was, I couldn't tell which position his sword was in, so I didn't know how to block. During one lesson, he finally let me use my fire to defend myself, confident, as always, in his ability to fight off every attack with his frost. After our lesson, if the weather was good, we would find a spot under one of the fruit trees and unpack a snack of fresh bread, cheese and crispy apples, compliments of Brother Peel. In between bites, I would ask Arcus questions that he somehow managed not to answer. His childhood remained a mystery, aside from his brief retellings of his nursemaid's stories, some of them surprisingly similar to grandmother's. He was also willing to share combat techniques in great detail, but if I asked who had taught him, or if he'd ever used the moves, and against whom, he would suddenly remember he had promised to help Sister Clove muck the stables, or that Brother Thistle had requested his young eyes to decipher a bit of cramped script in some ancient book in the library. There was no surer way to rid myself of Arcus's company than by asking him personal questions. I felt like something had changed between us, but I never knew if it was me alone who felt the difference. Once we'd exhausted discussions over my lessons, we strayed onto other topics. I started to reveal myself more, to tell him things I hadn't thought I would ever share, especially not with a frostblood. Stories from my childhood, how I'd felt when I learned my grandmother had died, my guilt that she'd died alone on her travels, my secret envy of my mother's even temperament, my deep longing to fit in somewhere. He never offered sympathy, which I would have rejected anyway, but he did listen attentively and ask questions, drawing things out of me that sometimes surprised me. Then I told him about the day the soldiers came, and my voice broke and I forgot whom I was telling, so lost in the fear and horror of that day. When I wiped my eyes and looked up, he was staring at me with such a profound look of rage that I jerked back in shock.
"Now I know why you hate us so much."
I blinked in confusion. "I don't hate you."
"Well, perhaps you should."
My mind raced with possible responses, but none of them seemed right, either revealing too much of how I felt or seeming insufficient in the wake of his strong emotion. "I feel safe here," I finally said. He swallowed and stood abruptly.
"You've come as far as you can with a sword. Focus on your lessons with Brother Thistle from now on."
I watched, confused and hurt, as he strode toward the stables. I had worked hard on our sword lessons and had thought I was improving. It appeared he disagreed. While I packed up the food to take back to Brother Peel, I saw Arcus on his horse, Alabaster, speeding toward the woods at a ferocious gallop. One warm spring day, almost 2 months since I'd come to the Abbey, I dressed in my leggings and tunic and headed to the rocky training ground to meet Brother Thistle. Thin, curled blades of grass poked out of the dirt, and bud-laden branches rustled in a southwest wind. The air smelled of clean earth and yeast that wafted over the yard from the brewery.
"This manoeuvre is called the Tail of the Dragon," said Brother Thistle.
He demonstrated by putting his left foot forward as he leaned on his walking stick, then snapping his free hand forward and back as if he held an invisible whip. Frost swirled in a tight funnel that narrowed at the end and cracked against the ground, leaving it white.
"I saw the Fire Blood Masters use it to great effect in the Battle of Arras Plains," he said.
I put my foot forward and flicked my wrist.
A spark leaped from my hand and landed on the ground with a fizzle. I cursed and tried again. This time, a thin blade of fire jumped out and squirmed on the earth before dying. "Who created fire arrows with ease just yesterday?" he said with a hint of disappointment. "I know. It's just... some days are better than others. I didn't know why my powers were so inconsistent. One day my focus was sharp, my mind clear, and my gift obeyed my every command. Other days I felt scattered, and it didn't seem to matter how hard I worked. There seemed to be something weighing me down, as if a wet rag were wrapped around my heart.
I sense you have so much power, Ruby," he said,
his voice full of hope and frustration.
"What is stopping you?"
An image of my mother came to me. I thought of her often, remembering her calm and practical way of looking at the world, the way she was slow to anger and quick to forgive. I could picture her deft hands, which had been so clever at mixing new batches of tincture or salve. Sometimes an image of her face would flash into my mind, and I would find the spark in me dying. I suppose it's the way I was raised. My mother hated violence of any kind. She would detest me plotting to kill someone with my gift.
Is that why you struggle? Because your mother would not approve?
It's not only that. I had always had this feeling that something was churning underneath my skin. Deep inside was a pot of boiling water, a forge fanned by endless bellows, a volcano waiting to erupt, and I had spent my whole life fighting these sensations. Now Brother Thistle wanted me to let them free. I was taught to hide my gift, I explained. Never to use it. When I lost my temper, it was harder to control. My mother called it a gift, but... I shrugged, looking at the ground. I know she thought of it as a threat as well. And it was. Once I was so mad I almost burned down our hut. I looked up at the monk a little sheepishly. Firebloods like me are not meant to live in buildings made of wood and thatch. A low chuckle came from behind us. I swung around. Arcus had approached at some point, quiet as a shadow.
"So, if your temper brings out your fire," Arcus said, striding forward, "perhaps we can make you angry."
"Oh?" I asked, my pulse jumping with uncertainty, as it did every time I saw him since the day we'd last talked under the fruit trees. "And how will you do that?"
"Well, I recall you don't like being dumped in rivers or ponds. Perhaps we could start there." I crossed my arms.
"It also weakens my power." He looked thoughtful.
"Then perhaps a milder version of the same." He lifted his hand high and waved it in a circle.
The water in the air turned into tiny frozen droplets that fell on me, just as they had when he'd come to my cell. They melted as they hit my face, steaming slightly. I gritted my teeth. Next, he sent a breath of frost into my face, freezing my eyelashes. My heart sped up, my breath quickening. I rubbed the melting crystals from my lashes and glared.
"Enough," I growled,
the heat rising too quickly. He flicked out a hand at my feet, and I was suddenly standing on the smoothest of ice. My soft-soled boots had no grip. I slipped and went down on one knee.
"I said enough!"
I yelled, sending a blast of hot air at the ice, melting it.
"Next time that'll be you. You may not find me so easy to burn," Arcus replied,
his eyes grimly assessing.
"I'd like to try," I said between clenched teeth, heat rolling off me in waves.
He nodded.
"Burn me then, my raging inferno."
I started with a simple blast of hot air, something that might singe his ropes. He barely lifted a finger, and the air came back at me, followed by a chill wind. I pushed out a hand, concentrating on the heat around my heart. A flame shot out from my palm and was quickly swallowed by a ball of frost. I thrust both arms at him and summoned a wall of fire, larger than I'd ever been able to create before. A sheet of ice came up to meet it. I sent another gust of heat toward the ice, melting it. He snapped a blast of cold back at me, making me stumble. Brother Thistle had restrained himself, I realized, allowing me gains and successes whenever we sparred. Arcus was giving me no quarter. I steadied myself, changed my position, and threw a series of arrows of heat from various angles. With dizzying speed, he dodged or repelled all of them. They fizzled and hissed as they hit the cool ground. We circled each other.
"Your task is weeks away, and this is the best you can do," he taunted.
I breathed deeply as his barb struck home. It was exactly what I feared, that I wasn't ready.
With the hurt came a surge of anger. My blood heated, and this time I didn't try to stop it.
Brother Thistle, who'd been watching quietly, stepped forward.
"Is this a good idea?"
"She won't hurt me," said Arcus. "She isn't capable of hurting me or anyone else, including the king."
"Be careful," I warned, my voice low. He sent a spiral of frost at my neck. I battered it away. In an echo of my earlier move with fire arrows, he sent wicked shards of ice winging toward me. I parried, kicked, and melted them before they could connect.
"Better," he said. "Stop holding back."
We traded blows that increased in pace and intensity. As he parried all my attacks, I grew frenzied. I sent out a blistering wind that could have burned many an enemy, but my aim was wide.
"Focus!" he shouted. "Let yourself go, Fireblood!"
But I couldn't. A small part of me was still locked up tight, frightened of what I might do.
"She can't do it," Arcus said to Brother Thistle, who hovered, tense as a bowstring, on the edge of the training ground. "She'll fall at the king's feet and beg for mercy." "I won't!" I shouted, blasting him with a wave of intense heat, which he deflected with a swirling cloud of frost.
"So scared of your own powers," he said, his voice heavy with contempt, pouring cold out in waves.
"Too afraid to hurt anyone. Poor, weak thing." Rage uncoiled itself inside my chest, a sleeping tiger that had been poked too many times. Since the attack on my village, I had pushed down so many feelings. Hurt, fear, anger, grief. Now I was glowing with white heat. I whipped my hand forward and back, releasing a tail of the dragon. A thick column of fire with a wicked end shot toward his chest. Arcus raised a hand to bring up a shield of frost. I thought I saw him stumble just slightly, but the flame hissed into a harmless cloud of steam. He shook his head, and suddenly I saw that he was trembling with fury. He turned to Brother Thistle.
"She'll never be ready. Our plan has failed already."
"We still have time," the monk replied. Arcus slashed the air with his hand and turned to leave.
"Not enough."
My fingernails bit into my palms. No matter how hard I tried, he was always better. He had all the power, and mine was nothing in comparison. He was a Frostblood, and like all Frostbloods in this land, he held dominion over me. In my fury, the gains I had made, the way I had come to see Arcus as an ally, all that disappeared. Pain lit my heart and spewed up hate, the way fire belches smoke. I whipped my hand forward, aiming for his back. But instead, it was his hood that erupted in flames. Arcus cried out and fell to his knees. For the space of a breath, I stood there, stunned, as Brother Thistle rushed forward. I couldn't believe